All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton, Conference Championship Week edition of the show, and we are down to three football games left at any level for the next, well, 7.5 months now. Because after these conference championship games on Sunday, of course, there's the bye week. 2 weeks later will be the Super Bowl, and that's fun for everybody. And after that, folks, there is not going to be meaningful football of any kind until August, and I'm being generous there, counting preseason as just some kind of meaningful football just because we get to see the team again. But really, it's the last weekend in August when the next football that counts happens after the Super Bowl. So we're getting down to it. And some people are saying, you know, ratings were down a little bit this year for a few of the games, the playoff games and the NFL. They're down a tick, not much. It might just be fluctuation. The college football playoff championship game the other night was down a few million, and some people are saying it's football fatigue. There's too many games. I thought the college football playoff, before we get into all the stuff with the Bucks, first of all, most of the games were boring. That part you can't necessarily help much of, although there's a few things they could tweak. But second of all, I think it's just too long calendar-wise. I'm never going to complain about more football, but it just goes too far into, like, once the NFL playoffs really get going, to me, that's the ball game right there. And so I think they've got to find a way to keep it where they either finish, well, like it used to be in the old days, New Year's Day was the day, and everything got decided by that night. And then even in years later than that, they bumped it back a week or so, like, you know, the second Monday in January or something. But January 20th, and it's going to be even later in future years. That's too, people just, I think they fatigue a little bit. Plus, there's too much time between the games. And anyway, point is, we're here right now with three games left to go. And it hurts a little more because, not that I was rooting against the Commanders or anything. I wasn't petty enough to do that. But seeing what they were able to do to Detroit, seeing how beatable Detroit looked, it made you feel like, man, the Bucs really missed an opportunity. And I still don't think the Bucs were a Super Bowl team or anything this year. But there really isn't a huge reason they couldn't have been playing this weekend. And I'm not going to go back into it. We already did last week's show and kind of let it all air out. But I'm still thinking about the fumble on the jet sweep. It has not left my brain yet. I really want it to. Maybe after this weekend it will. But if the Commanders win again and they're sitting there in the Super Bowl when we had the ball and the lead on them with, you know, 8 minutes left and a chance to take a 2-score lead, and we fumble the football because nobody touched us, and then they go to the Super Bowl, that's going to be a problem for me mentally, okay? I'm going to have to get over that. It's already a problem enough. But again, I'm not rooting against them. I actually don't. I don't mind them at all. Jaden Daniels is great. It's more of what it reminds me of when they win that bothers me. But anyway, we'll talk about those two games coming up. Of course, the big news with the Buccaneers is that their coaching staff, or at least their offensive coaching staff, is going to be intact because Liam Cohen, as you all know, has decided, or at least for whatever reason, is going to stay with the Buccaneers for another year, as he was very, very close in the process with the Jags and actually was set to have a second interview with them, was said to be the favorite to be their head coach that they were going to hire, and instead has taken his name out of consideration, is going to remain the Bucs offensive coordinator. Obviously huge for us, and you never know how these things will age. You never know, looking back years from now, if we'll look back and say, oh, well, I don't think we will, but hey, how foolish were we? We thought we wanted this one thing, and it turns out we would have wanted a different thing. But I think it's pretty safe to say, at least some continuity, for no other reason, even though Cohen's great, but even aside from Cohen being great, just to have some continuity for Baker Mayfield, you may have seen all the numbers thrown around there. There's been a bunch of false numbers posted on Twitter and all kinds of things, but Baker Mayfield, he has had the same offensive coordinator in consecutive years one other time. I saw a few people say he's never had the same offensive coordinator 2 years in a row. That did happen once in Cleveland, 2020 and 2021. He had Alex Van Pelt in place. So this is only the second time. But nevertheless, he's had seven offensive coordinators in 6 years. He had Cohen twice because he had with the Rams for a little bit there, and then, you know, comes with the Bucs. You can count him twice. But the continuity is huge. And if you look at what the Bucs were able to do offensively this year, it's no wonder why everybody wants to keep the status quo. And you look, you want your guys, if you're any kind of successful organization, your guys are going to get hired. Your guys are going to be wanted by other people. Your coordinators are going to become head coaches. That's natural. And even though in a perfect world, you could just lock everything in forever all the time when things were going well, it doesn't work that way. And so you would expect these things to happen. But for the Bucks, especially, again, with having had so much turnover at that position lately, and in Mayfield's career, the same thing, it's nice to see that they were able to hang on. Now, nobody knows for sure what was agreed to. People think that there's an agreement that he's the head coach in waiting. And maybe there's some handshake or verbal thing, but let me tell you guys, okay, the hiring process in the NFL doesn't work that way. There's a formal process. You can't sign somebody up to be the head coach before they're the head coach. You have to open the interview process up. There's the Rooney Rule, but that's just one part of it, so don't get mad at the Rooney Rule because there's other things too. But could they have said, hey, look, man, we're not going to write any of this down, but, you know, Todd's 62. What is he, 62, 63? Todd's 62, you know, has a couple years left on his contract. You know, maybe ready to kind of hang it up in the next year or 2 years, and you're the guy. And we're going to pay you in the meantime at a level requisite with what you would be making as a head coach anyway, and make you one of the highest paid coordinators. From what Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times was reporting, is that it was like around $4.5 million, which is the same as Fangio for the Eagles, the defensive coordinator. So, hey, nothing to say. They didn't say that to him. Hey, man, we'll take care of this. Just he's got a family. You don't have to move. You don't have to do anything. Just keep doing what you're doing, and you're going to get to where you want to be here instead of having to jump all over the place, especially when you talk about a Jags organization. I know they fired their GM that everybody I've never actually dealt with Trent Baalke or anything like that. I don't know anything about him personally, but I almost hope he is as bad as everybody says, because, man, no guy's caught more flack. Like, nobody wants to work there because of this guy. I don't know why they waited to fire him until after all the coaches they wanted had already turned them down multiple times in different coaching searches. But finally, they made the move there. And so there was some speculation. Oh, man, well, now that they made that move, maybe Cohen wants to go back. He says that, or he doesn't say, but it has been said that's not the only reason. Whatever it is, Cohen is here for now. And he's in a really good position, I think, because one, I mean, there's two schools of thought on it. One, all he's got to do next year is produce a very solid offense, even if it's not quite as good as this year's. And there isn't any reason to believe it won't be. But as long as it's not a bad offense, then he would be a head coaching commodity once again after next season. And two, even if it doesn't work out, I mean, let's say I saw Joe post this on the website, and Pete Prisco had said this. Well, if it goes really bad in Tampa and it backfires, then they probably fire Bowles anyway, and then he can just become the head coach here. So either way, you know, here's the thing. There's only 32 of those jobs. They're really hard to get. And even once you get one, if you screw it up, you may never get a chance to do it again. I know they recycle coaches sometimes and things like that, but it's if you want to be a head coach in the National Football League, it's incredibly hard. Only a few of them come open every year. And if you get one and it goes poorly, that's it. You're in coordinatorsville, even that, maybe position coach forever. And so you get one shot. And I know that financially they're all taken care of. This isn't really as much about that. But, you know, you have to really, really make sure if you're going to turn one down that you know you're doing the right thing. So I could understand if Liam Cohen had left, even in the face of the fact that the Jags maybe aren't the ideal organization, or maybe this situation or that situation isn't perfect. I mean, look at Byron Leftwich, and Rick Stroud, again, wrote a great piece on him a little while back, I think it was a week or two ago, about what he's up to now. He's out of coaching, and he got scapegoated, even though he ran a good offense here and obviously won a Super Bowl here, because the Bucs had a down year offensively on the way out for him, and he was the hot guy. He was the guy who was considered for Jacksonville, and the reports were, oh, he didn't want it because of the situation. He says that's not true. Point is, he missed his window, and now not only is he not a head coach in the NFL, he's not coaching anywhere. He's not a coordinator. He's not even a position coach, and he wants to be. And, you know, for his sake, I hope he does get a chance to, because I thought he got, and we were all upset. We were all on top of him for all this, that, and the other with the offense the way it ended, especially the running game. But the point is, like, he's out of it, you know? Like, so you have to really, like, be careful when you're trying to make career moves for something that's really, really hard to get into, and you're turning stuff down. I don't care how bad it is, you know, like I said, there's 32 of them, and, you know, you want to go in there to the best situation. You want to go in there and light it up. You want to go in there. Everybody wants to be the next Bill Belichick, next Parcells, next Mike Tomlin, whatever it is, guys who have been able to stay head coaches for years and years and years and years, it works out that way for very few. And so sometimes you just got to take it. I'm glad Liam Cohen didn't. I think he'll be fine. And I'm excited about this offense next year, like I said on the show last week. I mean, what do we have offensively to look forward to on this team? Obviously, Chris Godwin's the main. That's the one we don't know about. I think he'll end up staying, but now there's talk that Brady, you know, he's running things over in Vegas for the Raiders, and he may be interested, and he might put up a big number offer. Maybe, maybe not. But Godwin's really the only thing they got to worry about. Otherwise, you got Mike Evans back and ready to go. McMillan took a big step forward as a receiver this year, and he could be the next Godwin. Or I don't want to say that about anybody, but he could be a guy who fills more of that role, and then they have to get a guy behind him. Running backs, obviously, we're in great shape there. Bake, we're in great shape at quarterback. Offensive line, Bredesen wants to come back, but even if not, they could find a left guard. The offense is pretty well stocked. So as an offensive coordinator, you're probably thinking, you know, there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to do a lot of what we did this year again, and maybe even do it better because we'll be in the second year now. You know, you go through all these mini camps starting not that long from now, but once we get into the spring and mini camps and training camp and all that, and all those first team reps that you were putting stuff in before, now you're practicing and fine tuning what you already know, and that should help a lot too. So there's a lot of reasons to be excited about the offense, and we'll check in on the defense, but this is a situation where there was a lot. I mean, it was big news yesterday. I'm recording this on Thursday, and the news came out yesterday. It was big news when the original tweet, I believe, from Adam Schefter came out that Cohen was sticking with the Buccaneers. And there's only a few things, especially like non-football game, like actual game on the field related things, that make me stop what I'm doing and start texting all of my friends and family that are also Bucs fans. This was one of them. Like, I immediately, I saw that tweet, screenshot, boom, I started firing off text to all my buddies. I was like the mini Schefter. Like, I wanted to be the first one to tell all my friends, so I kept texting everybody the screenshot, Liam Cohen, stay. Like, it was one of those stop what you're doing, this is big type things. And I even said on Twitter, if you follow me, at Bobby Game Day, BobbyGameDay, I said, this is kind of like the bizarro Mike Shula. Because if you remember, old school Buck fans remember, but if you remember back in the late 90s, early 2000s, the Bucs under Tony Dungy and how dominant their defense was, and their offense was just an atrocity. I mean, the offense couldn't gain 300 yards. It would take them a month. Like, they won games 6-3. They won games 13-10, grinded it out. The offense wasn't explosive, didn't produce. And we had, I mean, you know, had Warwick Dunn, had Mike Allstott, Riddell Anthony, Jacquez Green. Offensive line wasn't terrible. Trent Dilfer was the quarterback for most of that. Sean King then did some too. I always loved Sean King. But my point is, the offense was really bad. And Mike Shula was really, really conservative. And obviously, looking back now, I don't think our offense was very good, period, no matter who was the coordinator. But, of course, at the time, it also felt like Mike Shula wanted 3 yards in a cloud of dust, almost like he didn't want to score. Like, he just wanted to just, you know, win with the bare minimum, and Dungy was the guy behind that whole thing. And that's how all the fans felt. So we never thought Dungy would make a move. And I remember the day that the Bucs announced they were firing Mike Shula, we couldn't believe it. Like, we're like, wow, Dungy just made an aggressive move offensively, and we're going to actually go. And we thought all of our troubles were over. I remember it distinctly because I was in college getting the news. I don't remember how I got it because this is before cell phones were ubiquitous like they are now. But I remember getting that news, and same thing as this yesterday. I like started calling people on the little cordless phone we had at my apartment in college. I called all my buddies that weren't, hey, they did it. Can you believe it? They really did it. They fired Mike Shula. Our troubles are over. Like, we thought everything was going to be hunky-dory. And this was like the bizarro version of that, like the opposite of that. Hey, we actually kept a good offensive coordinator. Does anybody remember, by the way, who replaced Mike Shula when they finally made that move for the old school hardcore Bucs fans? The guy we thought was going to be the savior, namely because even though nobody had really ever heard of him, he wasn't Mike Shula. It was Les Steckel, who is 78 years old and still coaching. I looked it up on Wikipedia. He's coaching at Center College in Danville, Kentucky. They made the Division III playoffs this year, but they lost to Carnegie Mellon in the first round. But bless his heart, he is still out there coaching. And there's a pause there for a reason, because this week's edition of the Free Stretch is a two-part show. And the reason it's a two-part show is because literally as I'm recording the show today, to quote the Big Lebowski, new shit has come to light, and everything I just said no longer applies, because it sounds like Liam Cohen, and you've probably heard this by now, is in Jacksonville, and after taking his name out of the running for the Jags job yesterday and presumably signing a contract to remain with the Bucks, he didn't actually sign the contract and has been, according to Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, unable to be reached by the Bucks, and is in Jacksonville circling back for another interview and is now on the verge, and by the time you listen to this, may well be the new head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And so when I heard the news, and again, what you just heard on the show, see, with podcasting, it's not live radio. I record it. So I actually stopped recording, tried to figure out what was going on, then time passed, and now what you've just heard and what I'm saying now is the second part later in the day. Now it's the early evening when I'm recording the rest of this. But going back to what I said earlier in the show just now, as far as your ears are concerned, like I said, 32 of these, and it's hard to blame a guy for taking the chance to get one of them when you never know. It may be your only one. I still think he would have been in good position, and it's not official yet. I mean, I'm doing this show right now as things are happening. By the time you hear this, it's Thursday night or Friday or Saturday or even Sunday. The thing may be finalized one way or the other, so just know where I'm coming from right now as I talk to you is a place of nothing is certain yet. But let's just recap where we are right now. And this is as of 6:30 p.m. on Thursday evening. Like I said, by the time you hear this, there may be more that you know. It may be official one way or the other, but I'm not going to wait until Friday or Saturday to record the show. As of right now, Liam Cohen was the top target for the Jags for their head coach position coming into this week. He was set to interview for a second time on Wednesday of this week, but then withdrew his name. The Bucs offered him an extension to become one of the highest paid coordinators in the league, and it was reported that that was agreed to. Whether he signed the contract or not is in some dispute. There are reports that he didn't, but it doesn't matter. You can leave under contract for another team if it's for a promotion, is the rule there. And so since he's moving from coordinator to head coach, whether he signed the contract or not on Wednesday at One Buck Place is irrelevant. At that point, though, the Jags fired their general manager, Trent Baalke. Then they reached back out to Cohen to see if he would reconsider, and Cohen started engaging with the Jags again. Now, as of Thursday, he has been unreachable by the Bucks for most of the day, until he finally called Todd Bowles later in the day on Thursday to tell him this was going on, although at that point Bowles already knew, according to reports. As I speak, Cohen is at the Jags facility trying to finalize a deal, and the Bucks, at least it's to be believed at this point, are sitting and waiting. Nothing's official yet, though, and you know, next time we talk, it will be. I will only say this much. There's a lot I don't know right now as I'm doing all this that you may know by the time you hear it, but either way, it's all happening extremely fast. The only thing I'm really going to say is I'm not going to jump to conclusions. I'm already seeing a lot of very, you know, targeted vitriol at Cohen about not being loyal, shady, blah, blah, blah. And that may well all be true. I'm just not prepared to go there yet. It could be as simple as, like I said, maybe he had hang-ups about the job that don't exist now, or maybe the Jags came back with an even better offer. If he's getting offered much, much, much more money than even the Bucks offer of more money, then listen, man, it's not me to tell anybody how to live their life. There's ways to handle things that are okay and maybe a little more shady, but I don't know enough of the details to know if this was truly shady or not, so I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to feign complete outrage and act like, oh my God, I can't believe he would do this. I mean, of course, you know, I can understand it under certain circumstances. And we have no idea what the details are of any deal, either with the Bucks or with the Jaguars. So that's where I'm going to leave it right now. But if it does come to this, and he does leave. The Buccaneers have options. You got Josh Grizzard, the pass game coordinator, younger guy, but he's been working in this offense, and maybe he could kind of preserve continuity if Cohen is indeed leaving. And there are others. I'm not too worried about it right now. I mean, I said this in the first half of the show, you're going to lose guys if you're successful. And look no further than the defense. Casey Rogers, who's co-defensive coordinator, along with Larry Foote. Casey Rogers already taken the job in Green Bay, so he's moving on. I know people said, oh, well, we need to stir things up and mix it up on the defensive side of the ball since they weren't that good, except we're losing the good defensive coaches because he was the run game coordinator and D-line guy, and we had like an awesome run defense for all the issues they had in pass defense. And Larry Foote, now Larry Foote's just interviewing, so we don't know anything on him yet, but he is interviewing with the Lions, and he's kind of co-defensive coordinator with Casey Rogers. And obviously, when you're the defensive coordinator here, you're not really, because Todd Bowles is still calling the defense, whereas Casey Rogers will get a chance to actually call now. So even though it might seem like a lateral move in title, it's not really a lateral move in practice because he'll get to legitimately be the defensive coordinator and call plays. But this happens to any successful team all the time, and you have to find new people. If Liam Cohen does take this job, I was reading this, it'll be his 7th job in 7 years. And again, I'm not even criticizing, I'm just pointing out. And in fact, if you ask any Kentucky fans, because that's where Cohen was before, there's actually a tweet out there that's very similar. Well, Liam Cohen staying with Kentucky, and this is right before he took the Bucs job. So when it happened to us, we were all about, oh, hey, we got him, you know. But ask Kentucky fans and they'll tell you, and they'll probably express feelings similar to what Bucs fans are going to be expressing if you ask them a year from now about Liam Cohen. So, time will tell if this is true. If the Bucs, I know some people think they should have fired Todd Bowles and done whatever it took to keep Liam Cohen. I feel like they did everything they could, and sometimes you just lose a person, but I don't think firing Todd Bowles was an option, nor should it have been. Time will tell how this all breaks down, but I think the Buccaneers are going to be okay. And as much as I love what Liam Cohen did, there are ways to keep doing that, and the people the Bucs have here are going to allow them to keep doing that both on and off the field. We'll see. Right now, all still up in the air. But oh, what a tangled web we weave. So hopefully you stuck with the show the whole way through here both ways, because like I said, I didn't want to re-record the entire show. I almost wanted you guys to hear me talking and what I had to say when it sounded like Liam Cohen was definitely locked up for 2025, and then be able to compare and contrast that to how I sounded on the same day, just a couple hours later, when it then looked like he wasn't coming. So that's what today's show, this week's show, is going to be a juxtaposition of those two perspectives, let's put it that way. And right now, by the time I talk to you next week, we'll have things more definitive. In the meantime, I think it could be like a time capsule to go back and look at what we've been talking about on the show today. But there is actual football this weekend, you know, the two conference championship games. And so, for now, let's look forward to that. It's two-thirds of the full football inventory that's left this year, with the early game being the Commanders and the Eagles, and then the second game later in the day being the Bills-Chiefs. First, on that first game, the line on that game is the Commanders getting 6 points. Now, on one hand, there's a couple trends going against them. Namely, one of them is this is the fourth, because they ended the season on the road, and then they've had two road playoff games plus this one. Teams that are going into their fourth straight road game, which doesn't happen very often, obviously can only happen with the playoffs being part of it because they don't schedule you for four on the road in the regular season. But when this has happened in the past, teams, I believe, are 1-6 against the spread and 0-7 straight up in the situation the Commanders are in, where they're on the road for the fourth consecutive time. So that doesn't bode well for their chances. On the other hand, though, I don't feel like this game, it feels pretty evenly matched, so 6 feels like a lot. And when you take into account that the two teams just played at the end of the regular season, and the Commanders were getting, I think, 4.5 or 4 in that game, if I'm not mistaken, and they won it outright, what has changed since then? Why is the line 6 now? I know the game's in Philadelphia, and that other one was, the other one might have been in Philadelphia as well, but they played a couple weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, and they're playing again now. I don't see any reason for the line to be higher than it was the first time they played. So I feel like the line is a little juicy on one side where you want to take the points, but on the other side, obviously trends. I always look at trends, historical trends, and that's a big one going against the Commanders. But I think Vic Fangio is going to have his work cut out for him, although I think he is up for it. And I'll say this much, and I tweeted about this while the Commanders were dismantling the Lions on Sunday. That Bucs defense doesn't look so bad now, does it? I mean, everybody was ripping them to shreds, and they deserve certainly some of the criticism, but it wasn't all bad. And like I told you, I don't care what. I know they couldn't get off the field. I know we needed them to get the ball back a few times. They didn't do it, blah, 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 blah. 23 points, okay? That ain't half bad. And I would have taken that every single... If you told me 10 times before that wild card game, hey, Commanders get 23 points, do you take it, yes or no? Hell yes, I do. Hell yes, I do. Bucs offense should do more with that. And so there was blame to go around on both sides. But when you see the way Jaden Daniels carved up, and I know the Lions have a ton of injuries, and maybe it was bound to catch up with them. I didn't think it'd be their first playoff game after everything they accomplished in the regular season. But when you saw him out there carving them up like that, and not just the Lions, but he's been doing that to a lot of teams, but not the Bucs. All right? That tells you something. So, you know, it just makes me more frustrated because I know we had those guys. As far as Bills Chiefs go, I mean, that's obviously stud on stud, heavyweight fight, name your cliche. But I think, and this is nothing more than gut, this isn't based on some analytical stuff or anything like that, I just feel like Buffalo is finally ready to break through and get it done. And I know the Chiefs, they continue to look vulnerable, they continue to look beatable, and they always find a way. Against Houston, they were in pretty decent control all game. I had a big problem with both the personal fouls that were called on plays against Patrick Mahomes that were both huge calls. One gave the field goal to the Chiefs on their opening drive where it would have been a punt, and another one preserved a touchdown drive. It was only on second down when it happened on the second drive, so who knows what would have happened, but it was a big, big penalty. And that didn't help things. The Texans also didn't help matters with their kicking game. But nevertheless, it never felt like the Chiefs weren't going to win that game. Either way, we know no matter who they're playing, they might look vulnerable, they might play down to their opponent, they might just barely eke it out, but they always find a way to win. I think the Bills finally go get it done this time. And you know what? As far as who I'm rooting for, I always say this. I mean, I'm a Bucs fan. I'm not one of those people that has to pick another team once the Bucs are eliminated, so I'm not rooting for anything. I may root for specific Super Bowl matchups. I'm not one of those people who's tired of the Chiefs. Oh, anybody but the Chiefs. No, if the Chiefs win, that's fine. I mean, it's entertaining to watch that level of football. I would love to see it for Buffalo's fan base because they're still in that category. It's kind of, I mean, it's different because the Red Sox are rivals. But before the Red Sox won in 2004 or the Cubs won in 2016, you know, they had that lovable, hey, underdog, plucky, long-suffering, you know, drought. Or in the Cubs' case, you know, I mean, the Red Sox and Cubs were both triple digits, right, as far as how long it had taken. In the Bills' case, they've never won. And that fan base is a really good fan base. And I know a few Bills fans here, and they're great people. And just for their sake, I'd love to see it. Now, if they do win it, they might turn around and become insufferable just like the rest of the successful fan bases. But until then, you kind of root for them. So I wouldn't mind seeing that. But at the same time, I'm not like, oh, God, the Chiefs. No, I mean, if the Chiefs get it done, they get it done. Good for them. I mean, they deserve it. Whoever can get it. I just hope it doesn't come down to some BS personal fouls. And, you know, the one on Mahomes, the second one this past Sunday where he became a run, like he was running. He was across the line of scrimmage. So it's one thing if they're in the pocket. But he became a runner, danced around a million times, making guys miss. Guys are diving at him. Then finally, at the last second, when they're closing in on him, he goes down and slides. The two guys hit each other. They don't even hit Mahomes. And, oh, head contact. No, you're a runner. Like, in the pocket, okay, but he was a runner. Just a really, really bad application of what should be the rule and what the rule really is, and the referee should know better than that. But either way, I just hope it doesn't come down to something like that. That's my main thing. And beyond that, I'm not rooting for any particular outcome. I just want to see good football. We've only got three more games to go. And then we go into that long, long offseason. We'll know a lot more about the Bucs coaching staff in due time. And by the time I record the show next week or whenever I record the next one before the Super Bowl, you know, we'll be able to kind of really get down into what happened here. Because it's still happening right now as I speak. But thanks for bearing with us with breaking news on the Free Stretch today. Although by the time you hear it, it will be well past the point of broken. Thanks to the Joes for giving me the platform, putting me in front of you guys on the best place anywhere for Bucks coverage, TV, radio, internet, JoeBucksFan.com. Refreshed, updated, constantly throughout the year. Hell, it's even better in the offseason than it is in season. Thanks to them. Thanks to you for listening. Enjoy Gasparilla. If you're going to Gasparilla, have a great time out there. Be safe. Going to be a little chilly in the morning, but it'll warm up throughout the day. I might see you out there if you're anywhere around Beta Bay and Bayshore. I'm always around there. And other than that, have a great weekend. We'll talk next week. That's your free stretch for the championship round weekend. And wherever you are, and no matter who the coaching staff is, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.